Chapter 35. Father Captain De Soia uses the power of the papal diskey in ways he had never before attempted. Mare Infinitus Station 326 Mid-Littoral, where the hawking mat was discovered, is declared a crime zone and put under martial law. De Soia brings in PAX troops and ships from the floating city of St. Therese and places all of the former PAX garrison and the fishing guests under house arrest. When St. Therese's governing prelate, Bishop Melandriano, protests this high-handedness and argues the limits of the papal diskey, De Soia goes to the planetary governor, Archbishop Jane Kelly. The Archbishop bows to the papal diskey and silences Melandriano under threat of excommunication. Appointing young Lieutenant Spruill as his adjutant and liaison during the investigation, De Soia brings in PAX forensic experts and top investigators from St. Therese and the other large city platforms to carry out the crime scene studies. Truthtell and other drugs are administered to Captain C. Dobbs Powell, who is being held under arrest in the station's brig, the other members of the former PAX garrison there, and all the fishermen who had been present. Within a few days, it becomes obvious that Captain Powell, the late Lieutenant Belius, and many of the other officers and men of this remote platform had been conspiring with area poachers to allow illegal catches of local game fish, to steal PAX equipment, including one submersible that had been reported as sunk by rebel fire, and to extort money from fishing guests. None of this interests Father Captain De Soia. He wants to know precisely what happened on that evening, 2 standard months earlier. Forensic evidence mounts. The blood and tissue on the hawking mat are DNA tested and transmitted back to the PAX record section in St. Therese and at the orbital PAX base. 2 distinct strains of blood are found. The majority is positively identified as the DNA pattern of Lieutenant Belius. The second is unidentified in Mare Infinitus PAX records, despite the fact that every PAX citizen on the Sea World has been typed and recorded.
"So how did Belius's blood end up on the flying carpet?" asks Sergeant Gregorius. "According to everyone's testimony under truth-tell, Belius was knocked in the drink long before the fellow they captured tried to escape on the mat."
De Soia nods and steeples his fingers. He has turned the former director's office into his command center, and the platform is very crowded, with 3 times its former population now aboard. 3 PAX Sea Navy frigates are at sea anchor off the platform, and 2 of them are combat submersibles. The former skimmer deck is full of PAX aircraft, and engineers have been brought in to repair and extend the thopter deck. Just this morning, De Soia has ordered another 3 ships to the area. Bishop Melandriano transmits his written protests at the mounting costs at least 2 times a day. Father Captain De Soia ignores them.
"I think our unknown stopped to pull the lieutenant out of the... how did you call it, Sergeant? Out of the drink. They struggled. The unknown was injured or killed. Belius tried to make it back to the station. Powell and the others killed him by mistake."
"Aye," says Gregorius. "That's the best scenario I've heard."
In the hours since the DNA results were transmitted back from St. Therese, they had woven many others. Plots with poachers, conspiracies between the unknown and Lieutenant Belius, Captain Powell murdering former co-conspirators. This theory is the simplest.
"It means that our unknown is one of those traveling with the girl," says De Soia. "And he has a merciful, if stupid, side to him."
"Or he could have been a poacher," says Gregorius. "We'll never know."
De Soia taps his fingertips together and looks up.
"Why not, Sergeant?"
"Well, Captain, the evidence is all down there, ain't it, sir?"
he says, jerking a thumb toward the surging violet sea outside the windows.
"The Navy boys here say it's 10,000 fathoms deep or more. That's almost 20,000 meters of water, sir. Any bodies there have been eaten by the fishes, sir. And if he was a poacher who got away, well, we'll never know. And if he was an off-worlder, well, there aren't any central PAX DNA records. We'd have to search the files on several hundred worlds. We'll never find him."
Father Captain DeSoya drops his hands and smiles thinly. This is one of those rare times when you are wrong, Sergeant. Watch. In the next week, DeSoya has every poacher within a 1,000-kilometer radius rounded up and questioned under truth-tell. The rounding up involves 24 sea naval ships and over 8,000 PAX personnel. The cost is enormous. Bishop Melandriano becomes apoplectic and flies to Station 326 mid-littoral to stop the madness. Father Captain DeSoya places the cleric under arrest and has him flown to a remote monastery 9,000 kilometers away, near the polar ice caps. DeSoya also decides to search the ocean bottom.
"You won't find anything, sir," says Lieutenant Spruill. "There are so many predators down there that nothing organic makes it 100 fathoms deep, much less to the bottom. And according to our soundings this week, that's 12,000 fathoms. Besides, there are only 2 submersibles on Mare Infinitus that can operate at that depth."
"I know," says DeSoya. "I've ordered them here. They will arrive tomorrow with the frigate Passion of Christ." For once, Lieutenant Spruill is speechless. DeSoya smiles. "You're aware, aren't you, son, that Lieutenant Belius was a born-again Christian, and his cruciform was not recovered?" Spruill's mouth hangs open for a moment.
"Yes, sir. I mean, yes, but, sir, to be resurrected, I mean, don't they need to find the body intact, sir?"
"Not at all, Lieutenant," says Father Captain DeSoya. "Merely a good-sized segment of the cross we all bear. Many a good Catholic has been resurrected from a few centimeters of intact cruciform, and a bit of flesh that can be DNA typed and grown to order." Spruill shakes his head.
"But, sir, it's been over 9 big tides, sir. There's not a square millimeter of Lieutenant Belius or his cruciform left, sir. That's a giant feeding tank out there, sir."
DeSoya walks to the window. "Perhaps, Lieutenant. Perhaps. But we owe it to our fellow Christian to make every attempt, do we not? Besides, if Lieutenant Belius were to be granted the miracle of resurrection, he has to stand charges for theft, treason, and attempted murder, doesn't he?" Using the most advanced techniques available to them, the local forensic experts are available to lift unidentified fingerprints from a mess hall coffee cup in spite of the many washings the cup has undergone over the past 2 months. Of the thousands of latent prints, all are laboriously identified as belonging to garrison troops or visiting fishermen, except for this one reconstructed print. It is set aside with unidentified DNA evidence.
"During the web days," says Dr. Homer Ryan, the chief forensic expert, "the mega datasphere would have put us in touch with central hegemony files within seconds via the fat line. We could get a match almost instantly."
"If we had some cheese, we could have a ham and cheese sandwich," replies Father Captain DeSoya. "If we had some ham."
"What?" says Dr. Ryan.
"Never mind," says DeSoya. "I expect to have a match within days." Dr. Ryan is puzzled.
"How, Father Captain? We've checked the planetary databanks, run checks against every poacher you've captured. And I have to say, there's never been a mass arrest like this on Mare Infinitus before. You're upsetting a delicate balance of corruption that has existed here for centuries."
DeSoya rubs the bridge of his nose. He has not slept much in the past weeks.
"I am not interested in delicate balances of corruption, Doctor."
"I understand," says Ryan. "But I fail to understand how you can expect a match within days. Neither the Church nor Pax Central has files of all the citizens on various Pax worlds, much less of the Outback and Ouster areas."
"All Pax worlds keep their own records," DeSoya says quietly, "of baptisms and cross sacraments, of marriages and deaths, military and police records." Dr. Ryan opens his hands in helplessness.
"But where do you start?"
"Where the odds are the best in finding him," answers Father Captain DeSoya. Meanwhile,
Nothing is found of the hapless Lieutenant Belius within the 600-fathom depths to which the two deep-sea submersibles agree to descend. Hundreds of rainbow sharks are stunned to the surface and the contents of their stomachs analyzed. Still no Belius, neither remnants of him nor of his cruciform. Thousands of other sea scavengers are harvested within a 200-click radius, and bits of two poachers are identified in gullets, but no sign of Belius or the stranger. A funeral mass is held on Station 326 mid-littoral for the lieutenant, who is said to have died the true death and found true immortality. DeSoya orders the deep-sea submersible captains to go deeper looking for artifacts. The captains refuse. "Why?" demands the priest captain. "I brought you here because your machines can go to the bottom. Why won't you?"
"The lab mouths," says the senior of the two captains. "To search, we'll have to use lights. To 600 fathoms, our sonar and deep radar can detect them rising, and we could beat them to the surface. Below that, and we wouldn't have a chance. We won't go deeper."
"You will go deeper," says Father Captain DeSoya, the papal disc key glowing against the black of his cassock. The senior captain takes a step closer.
"You can arrest me, shoot me, excommunicate me. I won't take my men and machine down to certain death. You haven't seen a lamp mouth, Father."
DeSoya sets a friendly hand on the captain's shoulder. "I will not arrest, shoot, or excommunicate you, Captain. And I will see a lamp mouth soon, perhaps more than one." The captain does not understand. "I've ordered in three more of the Ocean Fleet's attack submarines," says DeSoya. "We are going to find, flush, and kill every lamp mouth and any other threatening canth within 500 clicks. When you dive, the area will be completely safe." The senior captain looks at the other deep-sea submersible captain and then back to DeSoya. Both of the captains appear to be in shock.
"Father, Captain, sir, do you know how much a lamp mouth is worth? To the off-world sport fishermen and the big factories at Therese, sir."
"About 15,000 Mare I Sedons," says DeSoya. "That's about 35,000 Pax Florins and almost 50,000 Mercantilis Marks. Each," DeSoya smiles. "And since you two will receive 30% finder's fees for locating the mouths for the Navy, I wish you good hunting." The two deep submersible captains hurry out the door. For the first time, DeSoya sends someone else off in the Raphael to run his errands. Sergeant Gregorius travels alone in the Archangel, carrying the DNA and fingerprint information, as well as threads from the hawking mat. "Remember," says DeSoya over tight beam from the platform a few minutes before Raphael spins up to total quantum state, "there's still a heavy Pax presence on Hyperion, and at least two torch ships in system at all times. They will bring you to the capital of St. Joseph's for a proper resurrection." Lashed into his acceleration couch, Sergeant Gregorius only grunts. His face looks relaxed and calm on camera, despite his imminent death. "3 days there, of course," continues DeSoya. "And I would think no more than one day to go through the files, and then you return."
"Got it, Captain," says Gregorius. "I won't waste any time in any Jacktown bars."
"Jacktown," says DeSoya. "Oh, yes, the old nickname for the capital. Well, Sergeant, if you want to spend your one real evening on Hyperion in a bar, be my guest. It's been a dry few months with me." Gregorius grins. The clock says 30 seconds before quantum leap and his painful extinction.
"I ain't complaining, Captain."
"Very good," says DeSoya. "Have a good trip. Oh, and Sergeant?"
"Yes, sir."
10 seconds. "Thank you, Sergeant." There is no response. Suddenly, there is nothing on the other end of the coherent tachyon tight beam. Raphael has made its quantum leap. 5 lamp mouths are tracked and killed by the Navy. DeSoya flies to each carcass in his command thopter. Good Lord, they're larger than I could have imagined.
he says to Lieutenant Spruill when they arrive above the spot where the first one floats. The grub-white beast is easily 3 times the size of the station platform. A mass of eye stalks, gaping maws, fibrillating gill slits each the size of the thopter, pulsating tendrils extending hundreds of meters, dangling antennae, each carrying a cold light lantern of great brilliance, even out here in the daylight, and mouths, many mouths, each large enough to swallow a fleet submarine. As DeSoya watches, the harvesting crews are already flocking over the pressure-exploded carcass, sawing off tendrils and eye stalks, and cutting the white meat to portable cubes before the hot sun spoils it all. Satisfied that the area is cleared of mouths and other deadly cants, the 2 deep-dive captains take their submersibles 12,000 fathoms down. There, amid forests of tube worms the size of old earth redwood trees, they find an amazing array of old wrecks. Poacher submersibles crushed to the size of small suitcases by the pressure. 1 naval frigate that has been missing for more than a century. They also find boots. Dozens of boots.
"It's the tanning process," says Lieutenant Spruill to DeSoya as the 2 watch the monitors. "It's an oddity, but it was true on old Earth as well. Some of the oldest deep-sea salvage operations, a surface ship called the Titanic, for instance, never turned up bodies. The sea's too hungry for that, but lots of boots. Something in the tanning process of leather discourages sea critters there. And here."
"Bring them up," commands DeSoya over the umbilical link.
"The boots?" comes back the submersible captain's voice. "All of them?"
"All of them," says DeSoya.
The monitors show a profusion of junk on the seabed. Things lost by the platform station crew over almost 2 centuries of carelessness. Personal belongings of the drowned poachers and sailors. Metal and plastic garbage tossed by the fishermen and others. Most items are corroded and misshapen by deep-sea crustaceans and unimaginable pressure. But a few are new enough and tough enough to be identified.
"Bag those and send them up," says DeSoya as they encounter shiny objects that might be a knife, a fork, a belt buckle, a...
"What's that?" demands DeSoya.
"What?" says the captain of the deepest submersible. He is watching the remote handlers rather than his monitors.
"That shiny thing. It looks like a handgun."
The monitor shifts its view as the submersible turns. The powerful searchlights track, return, and illuminate the object as the camera zooms in.
"It is a handgun," comes the captain's voice. "Still clean. Damaged some by pressure, but basically intact."
DeSoya can hear the click of the single-frame imager capturing this from the monitor.
"I'll collect it," says the captain.
DeSoya has the urge to add, "carefully," but does not speak. His years as tortship captain have taught him to let his people do their jobs. He watches as the grapple arm appears on the monitor and the remote handler gently lifts the shiny object.
"It could be Lieutenant Belius's flechette pistol," says Spruill. "It went over with him and hasn't been recovered yet."
"This is quite a bit farther out," muses DeSoya, watching the image shift and change on the monitor.
"The currents here are powerful, weird," says the young officer. "But I have to admit that it didn't look like a flechette pistol. Too, I don't know, squarish."
"Yes," says DeSoya. The underwater searchlights are flickering over the encrusted hull of a submersible that has been buried down there for decades. DeSoya is thinking of his years in space and how empty that different unknown is from any ocean on any world, teeming with life and history. The priest captain is thinking about the ousters and their strange attempt to adapt themselves to space the way these tube worms and cants and bottom-hugging species have adapted themselves to eternal darkness and terrible pressures. Perhaps, he is thinking, the ousters understand something about humanity's future that we in the Pax have only denied. Heresy. DeSoya shakes away the thoughts and looks at his young liaison officer.
"We'll know what it is soon enough," he says.
"They're bringing this load up within the hour."
Gregorius returns 4 days after his departure. He is dead. Raphael sends out its sad beacon. A torch ship rendezvous with it 20 light minutes out, and the sergeant's body is removed and brought to the resurrection chapel at St. Therese. De Soya does not wait for the man's revival. He orders the courier pouch brought to him at once. Pax records on Hyperion have positively identified the DNA taken from the hawking mat, and have also matched the partial fingerprint on the cup. Both belong to the same man, Rawl Endymion, born AD 3099 on planet Hyperion, not baptized, enlisted in the Hyperion Home Guard in Thomas month of the year AD 3115, fought with the 23rd Mechanized Infantry Regiment during the Ursus Uprising, 3 commendations for bravery, including 1 for rescuing a squadmate while under fire. Stationed at Fort Benjing in the South Talon region of the continent of Aquila for 8 standard months. Served out the remainder of his time at Khans River Station 9 on Aquila, patrolling the jungle there, guarding against rebel terrorist activity near the fibroplastic plantations. Final rank? Sergeant. Mustered out, honorable discharge. On Lent month 15, AD 3119. Whereabouts unknown until less than 10 standard months ago, Ascension month 23, AD 3126, when he was arrested, tried, and convicted in Port Romance, continent of Aquila, for the murder of one M. Dabil Herrick, a born-again Christian from Renaissance Vector. Records showed that Rawl Endymion refused offers to accept the cross and was executed by death wand 1 week after the arrest, on the 30th of Ascension month, AD 3126. His body was disposed of at sea. The death certificate and autopsy reports were notarized by the local Pax Inspector General. The next day, latent prints on the crushed, ancient, 45-caliber automatic pistol brought up from the ocean floor are matched. Rawl Endymion and Lieutenant Belius. Bits of thread from the hawking mat are not so easily identified by Hyperion Pax records, but the human clerk doing the search included a handwritten note that such a mat figures prominently in the legendary cantos composed by a poet who had lived on Hyperion until a century or so ago. After Sergeant Gregorius is resurrected, rests a few hours and flies to Station 326 mid-littoral to report, De Soya tells him the various findings. He also informs the sergeant that the 24 Pax engineers who have been swarming over the Farcaster portal for 3 weeks report only that there is no sign that the ancient arch had been activated, despite sightings of a bright flash by several fishermen on the platform that night. The engineers also report that there is no way to get inside the ancient core-constructed arch, nor to tell where, if anywhere, someone might have been transported through it.
Same as Renaissance V, says Gregorius. But at least you have some idea of who helped the girl escape.
Possibly, says De Soya.
He came a long way to die here, says the sergeant.
Father Captain De Soya leans back in his chair. Did he die here, sergeant? Gregorius has no answer. Finally, De Soya says, I think we're finished on Mare Infinitus, or will be in a day or two. The sergeant nods. Through the long bank of windows here in the director's office, he can see the bright glow that precedes the moonrise.
Where to next, Captain? Back on the old search pattern?
De Soya is also watching the east, waiting for the giant orange disk to appear above the darkened horizon. I'm not sure, Sergeant. Let's get things tidied up here. Captain Powell handed over to Pax Justice in Orbit 7, and soothed Bishop Melandriano's feathers.
If we can, says Sergeant Gregorius.
If we can, agrees De Soya. Then we'll pay our respects to Archbishop Kelly, get back to Raphael, and decide where to jump next. It may be time for us to come up with some theories on where this child is headed, and try to get there first,
not just follow Raphael's shortest line pattern.
Yes, sir,
says Gregorius. He salutes, goes to the door, and hesitates there a moment.
And do you have a theory, sir? Based on just the few things we've found here?
DeSoya is watching the three moons rise. He does not turn his chair around to face his sergeant as he says. Perhaps. Just perhaps.